This is the Epilogue Audio Experience.
You are listening to the Artist Podcast with me, Sajitha. Stay tuned. What is visual literacy and why is it important in a cluttered world? And are we getting desensitized to visuals because of the clutter? Because the audience has become creators. So who's the audience and who is the artist? Filipina Wine is co-founding director of the Watershed Collective, which is a non-profit educational organization that develops programs to use art to teach visual literacy, thinking and communication skills. He was the director of education at the Museum of Modern Art. One of his very important books as an author is Visual Thinking Strategies, published by the Harvard Education Press. Hello, Mr. Philip Yanavan. Thank you so much for taking our time to be part of the Artist Podcast. Philip, you have been the director of education at MoMA. We're living in a world where everything seems very cluttered. There are too many visuals being thrown at us every day, especially with the Reels, the Instagram, and so many other things besides the OTT platforms. What are your thoughts in terms of the world now, the cluttered world that we live right now in, and the importance of visual literacy?
Well, I don't think it's possible to overstress the importance of being able to make sense out of things you see. But much of it is not, much of this visual clutter is not necessarily very complicated to understand. It's just a mess. It's just so much of it. So I think we can become desensitized to images because of the number of them that we confront. But I think that what happens when you get complicated images, like the Museum of Modern Art is full of, you find people who are more confused by the imagery than they are easily understanding what it is, so that they ask for help. So when the images become complicated, it's very frequently the case that people sort of say, I don't know what this is about. Help me with this. And I think that sort of the appreciation of both music, movies, and art is challenging because of the fact that people don't know how to make sense out of them, even though, in fact, they really do.
You mentioned getting desensitized to images in today's very cluttered world, which has suddenly become cluttered in the last 5 to 6 years. Perhaps when, say, 10 years or 12 years or 15 years back, it was not cluttered. Do you think that's true?
No. I think the image world, the world has been cluttered with images for now for decades. And also, you know, with things like the speed at which transportation moves, we see so many images so quickly that we lose our interest in examining them. And so many of the images, as I said before, are so simple, like a stop sign, like an advertisement. So they don't really argue for you to look at them very deeply, because if you do, you'll really realize you're being manipulated by advertising, or why bother to look at the stop sign? You know what it means.
Tell me, Philip, now it's being said with the dominance of YouTube and Instagram Reels and TikTok, every person, whoever has access to the internet, has become a creator. And of course, that's one of the reasons why we are bombarded with images, with different sorts of images, also with NFTs coming in, so many other digital outlets for artists to put themselves out there. So who is the audience now? And what is the importance of educating them, what the artist is saying? Is that even going across to the audience?
Well, I think that I think that the thought of educating people about what the artist is trying to do is not necessarily the way to approach visual literacy. I think to appreciate what visual literacy is to think about the intelligence of the infant's eyes when they look at the world and they see a smiling face coming at them. They recognize one thing. If they see a frown or a concerned look, They react in a different way. And it's because they are visually literate, are becoming so. They use their eyes and their minds in combination to in order to understand what's going on around them. This is the way they develop their understanding of the world much of the time. And of course, soon enough, we are adding words and other sounds to help them understand an ever-expanding environment. But the fact is that the tools are in place. It's a combination of one's eyes and one's mind that makes sense out of the world visually. The fact is that people don't use their minds to interpret images in the same way. They think that if there are puzzles, they think that they need explanation, and that's the wrong approach. It's like when someone explains a book to you, not the same as reading and thinking about it and coming to your own notions about it, your own interpretation of it. The same thing as images, that sort of if someone explains it to you, it's not the same as you coming to understand it yourself. And I think that explanations stand in the way of people's own process that is so important. That is looking, looking again, looking more deeply, looking again, and thinking about what it is you see with each of those looks, and see how that changes as you consider more about, let's say, what an image might possibly be saying to you. The images can be art images, but they can also be, you know, great photography that comes at you quite frequently through the news.
So you're saying that the DNA of storytelling, the DNA of creativity, the DNA of understanding, interpreting the images, and because movies are also images, is already embedded in the DNA of humans.
Yes, I do.
But since we are already embedded, since storytelling is already embedded in the DNA of humans, because we have a history of, you know, drawing on the walls, the caves, that's where it started, and sitting around the fire to tell stories, the DNA is already there. But the aesthetics of it, the interpretation of it, do you feel that with a lot of so much of content being put out there, images, art, movies, somewhere the human DNA is getting resorted to more mediocrity than the quality of images that once were created or thrown at them? And that's one of the reasons, because there is a lot of mediocre content, a lot of good content or quality content can actually take a back seat, because the humans out there are not able to interpret it or understand it because the mediocrity is high out there?
Well, I think that sort of the mediocrity tends to make us dismiss imagery. And quantity of mediocrity, the quantity of stuff that is just junk, tends to deafen the eyes, tends to blind the eyes to sort of more provocative, more thoughtful, more beautiful things in the world. That sort of we stop, you know, when the countryside is full of litter and advertising and badly designed buildings and all sorts of clutter, kind of thing, to then turn on our perceptors to a more sensitive way of looking when you walk into a museum, let's say, is very hard. So I do think that the clutter is extremely important in desensitizing people. But the other issue is that they don't really know, unfortunately, like a child does. A child at four knows very well that they can look at the world and make sense of it. It's not necessarily the sense that an adult would make of it. It's their own sense, but they're confident about their ability to do so. Well, why is it when they're 34 and show up at the Museum of Modern Art, they want someone to lecture to them or write a label so they can read about what a picture is? That's the problem, I think, in visual literacy. It's not how we're built. It's not how our perceptions work. It's not even how our mind is trained to relate to perception. It does it automatically. It's not trained. It's just, it's natural for us to try to make sense out of what we see or what we hear, etc. But we don't realize that when you're looking at something that's complicated, that you can do that just the same way you would do it when you got to get to a, when you come out of the subway to a street corner and you're not exactly sure which direction you need to go, how you figure that out. Well, that's not very different from how you figure out how to make sense out of contemporary images that are designed as art. And they're and art, in my view of it, is the most complicated and complex kind of imagery that we face. And it's so therefore, when we get to the more difficult stuff, we panic. We don't know we can make sense of it, or we reject it. We walk by it.
So
and
you are
it's
saying, so you're saying that, okay, we reject it, we do not understand it when it comes to complicated art, and I would also include movies, which is slightly more on a higher intelligence level. But do you feel that the creators or slash the audiences also need to do something to enhance their ability to absorb that kind of artwork, which is complicated?
I don't think it's the job of the artist to make sense out of what they make stuff. I think anybody who is worth anything in filmmaking is visually illiterate. They're making sense out of things when they film them. They're making sense out of things when they edit them. And they do so usually very carefully. And quite often the results are extremely beautiful and extremely interesting and extremely provocative. They can make you think. But the fact is that sort of with films are different from, let's say, visual art, because they are part of it. They move.
Yeah.
And so at the same time, as you are looking at something, you're often hearing dialogue, people talking, or you're hearing music.
Yeah.
And the layering of all of that makes the looking at the imagery more complicated. It's harder to isolate sort of what you're looking at and think, my goodness, that's a beautiful picture, or that is so interesting. I've never thought of looking at the world that way, or whatever. When you've got static visual art, photography, painting, sculpture, all sorts of forms of visual art, digital images included. So you don't think you can make sense out of it. You haven't differentiated between that. So with film, you've got a different kind of problem, sort of pulling back to try to understand what you've just looked at. With the visual art, it sits there. With visual art, it sits there. It's quiet. It's all by itself. It's not moving. And you can take it in, and then you can look again and again and again.
Yeah.
You can look at all parts of it. You can look at, you can spend time in the middle or the corners or the edges or whatever, because it's just sitting still there and waiting for you to do that. Well, the problem is in that sense, it's not that the work is impossible to decode. It's that we don't take time to do it and don't know that. If we think about what it is that we can connect that to from our own lives, that we can at least begin to make sense out of things. When you come across something that is, you know, several hundred years old or 1,000 years old or whatever, I'm not saying that we actually know what things mean to another time and culture, but I'm saying that we have the tools to start to try to figure them out. And then we can add stuff. And that's where historians and other kinds of people can become extremely useful, is at the point that you've really exhausted your own resources at trying to figure something out and consult sources which can tell you, well, we've looked at hundreds of these things and think this to be the case. Or we've read other aspects of the culture of a people. And we think this is what this stands for, or this is a symbol of, or whatever.
Flip that.
It doesn't take much to recognize that something is a symbol, even if you don't know what it's a symbol of.
But creating art, like, for example, when you talk about paintings, when you talk about photography, when you talk about static art, which is more of a solo art, depending on the artist, the cost of creating that is different than the cost of creating a moving art like your movies. So the stakes are higher where we talk about movies. The stakes could be lower when we talk about static art like paintings, like photography. So when we're talking about different stakes, do you feel that the artists that are more on a complex side or have Like, because you have studied, you have been exposed to a whole wide range of art, and that could make your understanding of complicated and high quality art different than a commoner. So do you think that the audience or the viewers who come and consume these artworks, if they're not at par with the understanding of that, the artist might eventually, not be in demand for the kind of artwork that they want to create and not be able to earn out of it?
I think that there's a lot in that question,
Yeah.
but I think that artists learn to think about their art in ways that people who don't make art don't think. There are people who study art who know things about it and who think in different ways, more complicated ways about it than people who are new to art or new to a particular kind of art. But that said, what we often think is that we can't make sense out of something because we have never done it before. And that, I think, is a wrong assumption. But yes, so I worked, had the luck, great good luck to work with a cognitive developmental psychologist by the name of Abigail Hausen, who she was doing her graduate work at Harvard University's Graduate School of Education. Decided to try to study how people think when they look at works of art. She was the daughter of an art historian. She had didn't realize what she picked up from her mom just being around as her mother wrote, made lectures and did studies and so on. And when she got to college, she realized that she knew some things that her classmates didn't, but she knew that she also did not know anything like what her mother knew. So she thought, I wonder if there's a way to study the difference between beginning viewing and more expert viewing. And she did the work over the course of many years, interviewing hundreds of people, going back and trying to figure out what the person who has had no experience looking at art, how they think, and then how people who are more experienced think. One of the interesting things we found out about the Museum of Modern Art is at the Museum of Modern Art was that people who came to visit were at a lower stage of aesthetic development than the people who worked in the museum. That should not be a surprise. But what was interesting is that though we could speak the same language, let's say English, we could communicate with one another, the ways that people thought as they came into the museum were often less complicated. They did not have a good foundation for understanding what it was we said, so they couldn't make use of the information that we gave them. We thought in more complicated ways than they did, so they could hear it, they could appreciate it, they could be grateful for you saying it, but they couldn't make it work when they went to look at the next work of art. They couldn't generalize from it. They couldn't operationalize the information because it wasn't the way they thought. So it's true that people who do not have a lot of experience with looking at art think differently and less deeply than people who do spend their lives with art. But still, the business of visual literacy is not necessarily understanding art in the same way that an expert does, someone who spent their life looking at thinking about something. But that the where literacy becomes an issue is when you don't know how to start. And that's the problem. You see, you don't know to stop yourself and look carefully at something. I mean, one of the things that's great about the way we deliver a lot of films to people is that they're on t televisions, on video, and they're streaming, and you can stop them, and you can look at them. Wish we would do that more often. So you
Those points are so important, Philip. So important in terms of, well, I don't know in terms of perhaps the culture that's getting built. Tell me, Philip, we are moving more from, we did not talk about visual literacy so much, like for example in the creator's economy, as they call it, than we talk about the attention is what the whole world is wanting. so that they can boost themselves as creators. So the word visual literacy versus the attention economy. So attention economy is where everyone is vying for those 30 seconds of attention so that their work can be seen. And since they're vying for those 30, 60, 70, whatever seconds or, minutes of attention from their audience, the content is moving from the quality content to actually trying to create which is more shocking to get that attention, or something that is not very aesthetic but will appeal to a certain audience the world over. So, what are your thoughts in terms of this cultural buildup that's happening? More of so the artists have to design themselves to get the attention versus to put something of high quality there.
I mean, attention is very different from visual literacy, sort of in the attempt to attract by using shock techniques or surprises. I mean, it's like that happens, of course. But that said, those images often don't merit serious thought beyond the first impression. And I think that that's what we need to teach people is not that they should judge things, but that they should bother to look seriously at them and think about what they mean. Not just stop with that visual impression that can be attention grabbing, but not necessarily one that fulfills you. Sort of the way art can function, and the only way it functions usefully, is when it's paid attention to. And this the notion that we are only capable of staying on something for 30 seconds is something that we have been trained to do, where in fact, images on television and in many films you only see for 10 or 5 seconds, even. 10 seconds in a movie is a long hold. And so that's we certainly are trained to look at things quickly. And we look out the window of a car, things pass us more quickly than we can process them seriously and thoughtfully, but we still need to recognize them, know where we are and know what danger is there and et cetera. But the tools that make it so that we don't get into trouble, and the tools that make us get attracted to, say, buying a product or draw us quickly into something aren't the same things as those things that actually sustain your interest. You know, art is important to us because when we look at it, we often feel at the same time as we think. They stimulate both of those things. Real art does that. And when you stimulate your both your feelings and your ideas, you feed your spirit. And so when they tell us quickly a news story, and maybe use a shocking photograph to convey exactly how bad things are in some part of the world where some war is going on. They often don't leave it on for you long enough for you to think about, my goodness, what is this telling me if I really examine this thing? And that's the real problem with visual literacy, it seems to me. I think well, the real problem with visual literacy is the visual world gives us too many images too quickly, and that leads to bad habits when it comes to things that actually merit an examination. And much photo documentation of horrors in the world require thought to be effective at saying, you know what, maybe we should stop trying to kill each other. It doesn't work. It's not okay. It's terrible to see. So that if we're looking for images to change us, and they can. In my view, for example, the Vietnam War, the war that the United States fought in Vietnam in the 60s and 50s, 60s, and 70s was stopped because of a couple of photographs that people found so terrifying that they thought, no, we can't be doing this. So imagery has the power to do that. Even imagery that has no intention of being art, it's just catching a scene, has the possibility of perfecting us at a very deep level, at our level of our hearts and our psyches, and our, but if we don't look, that it can't happen. So visual literacy is a matter of asking people to slow down for a few minutes and look at
Yeah.
something serious. And that's a different process from that when we're sort of, let's say, watching a movie just to enjoy the whole story of it, et cetera. The interactions between the people.
Yeah, that's lovely. Philip, tell me this in terms of, I saw this on your website, VTS. How do you define VTS and how does that help or enhance visual literacy?
Visual BTS stands for Visual Thinking Strategies. There's really one basic strategy, so it should be Visual Thinking Strategy. But that said, it asks you to look at works of art that have been carefully chosen to be of interest to you and also to be accessible to you, how old you are, no matter how old you are, or where they have accessible visual material in them, which means stuff you recognize. But also stuff that puzzles you, that confuses you. So you have enough to start with and then enough to puzzle and stay with. But visual thinking strategies sort of choose an image for your audience, one you think that they will enjoy looking at. And that the world is so full of images that that's not a huge task. And then you ask them to look at it for a moment in silence, a few moments. You ask them what's going on in this picture, which is a meaning-making question. It's the kind of a question that you ask yourself every time you step out of the subway and wonder which way you're supposed to go. What's going on here? What's happening? So it's not a hard question to answer. That's why we use it. We use it a question that makes perfect sense to people. It also enables them to start not just to think about what they see, but what it in what they can infer about meaning from looking at it. So the look expression on the face can mean many things. It can mean horror, it can mean delight, it can mean laughter, it can mean sadness, it can mean thoughtfulness. So you have all these different possibilities and sort of, so in a visual thinking strategies exercise, you look with other people and you collectively answer the question, what's going on in this picture? And then we ask, what do you see that makes you say that? So the people think about what it is about the eyes, let's say, that are conveying the particular that they're reading. And ask, what more can we find? So the group continues the process of looking. What we find is that the very people who people think have no attention span, let's say the young people of the world, is that they will stay with talking with about a picture easily for 20 minutes. And if it's for several reasons. One, you've asked them to, you've given them an interesting task, which is tell me what you see is thinking, think is happening in this picture. That's a really great task for people. It's one they can do, but as and but it initiates the process that I'm talking about, sort of that making that mind, that eye mind connection.
Yeah,
I
the eye
see.
mind connection. Yeah, lovely. Lovely, Philip. Okay,
Yeah.
so the last question before we just have 5 more minutes. So last question, Philip, is that what can common people do daily to enhance their visual literacy? Can they do that on their own? How do they go about it?
They absolutely can do it on their own. It's the process of, let's say, looking at something for more time than you usually give to it. So when you see a news photograph, you actually look at it, see what it's telling you, because they all tell you something. Let's say the what does Modi look like today? You know, it sort of said sort of what is the newspaper and its various different slants on politics convey because this particular, so you can do it with any kind of imagery, but the point is to stop and think about what is telling me, what this image is telling me, and how I come to that conclusion.
Basically, stopping and really looking at things and not just running every day towards the next thing that's been thrown at you, but actually trying and slowing down a bit, really looking at also really looking at aesthetically driven images, which are abundant out there, images or movies or any artwork that is being put out there. So, yeah, so just need to
One of the
See
things,
more, yeah.
if after a movie you simply talk about it for 5 or 10 minutes with whoever was watching with you,
Yeah.
when you're walking down the street and you see something in a store, stopping and looking at it really thoughtfully for a few minutes to sort of see what you can learn from looking at the display in a window. Or most importantly, perhaps it would be sort of looking at nature,
Yeah.
looking at tree, looking at things that sort of that have a comfort level, that provide a comfort level for us sort of in view of our lives,
Yeah.
sort of in a nature. We may have put nature at a distance, but it doesn't mean that it can't sustain us. It doesn't mean that it can't give us something that's completely refreshing and deep.
Yeah.
But the fact is, if we stop, look at a tree, look at the sunset, look at a store window, look at a news photograph. If we just think every day about stopping and having a look and thinking about what this is, thinking about why this is constructed in the way it is. What is this trying to tell me? What is this window trying to sell me? What is this advertisement trying to make me do?
Yeah.
That
So
all of that.
basically, like stopping and looking and not just seeing is what we need to sort of pay attention to. Yeah, that's lovely. Thank you so much, Philip. I really appreciate your time being here.
Thank you for asking these good questions.
Good day, bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye. And so the key takeaway is enhancing your visual literacy daily, which is not just seeing, but actually looking, pondering, absorbing, perhaps discussing, and not just rushing through things. That's it, folks, for this weekend, which we are celebrating a longish weekend in India. Happy Holi to whoever is celebrating in India and the world over. And do not forget to find us on our Insta handle, the Dot Artist Podcast.